What is meaning wave? Being a connoisseur of meaning, how would you define meaning? You know, what is meaning mean to you? What would you today, as Akira the Don now, say to that Akira the Don who wrote John the Baptist? What advice would you give that guy? Which album is your favorite that you've made personally? Do you make like time in the day to just listen to stuff, podcasts, etc., and try and kind of explore different areas so you can find new material for Meaning Wave? Or does it just kind of come naturally, organically in your own normal listening patterns? Do you think that's a key to, do you think that's one of like the essential principles to being productive? What is Meaning Wave? So we're speaking a little bit about meaning. We're speaking a little bit about the meaning within music and the electricity in the room and the electricity in the fingers and the throats of the artist recording it. How would you define Meaning Wave to somebody who's never heard it before or doesn't know what it is?
Well, there's a number of ways you could do it. One way you could think about it is as a psychotechnology, utilizing the most powerful delivery mechanism we know, which is music.
Yes.
Which human beings can integrate some of the most powerful ideas, wisdom, practical, useful knowledge that humans have gathered over thousands of years. You can think of it like mythology, right? The purpose of a myth is to encapsulate within it the knowledge of the society and pass that over to a child so they can understand it. You've spent thousands and thousands of years working shit out, right? And like, how can you give that to a child? That's what Pinocchio is for, right? That's what the Jungle Book is for. That's what anything that truly resonates and is carried on, that's what the Bible is for, right? Bible's very long, by the way. Yes. Bible take you a lot, and it's difficult for a child to read, but child versions of these things, that's what these things are for, right? That's the purpose of myth. And prior to the printing press, one of the ways that humans would deliver this information, it was not via books, they would speak it.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't just speak it. It was more rhythmic and melodic in its imparting, which is why Beowulf is a fucking poem, right? It's a big ass poem. So you can remember it, right? That's why Ulysses is a poem, right? So you can remember it. So you'd be gathered around a campfire and people would have whole ass fucking books in their heads, right? And you would bang out your bit. I'm going to say the bit of Beowulf. And yeah, your homie says that bit and your dad says that his bit, and he drops a little bit of his dad's sauce in there, making it a bit unique to him, right? Yeah. And everyone's involved in the telling of the story, and it's done via a delivery of words with rhythm and melody inherent in them. So you can remember them, so they're sticky, so they can keep going, right?
Yeah.
The printing press took that away from us, but that will be just looked back upon as a weird little blip in history before we then got back to being more involved in the telling of the story. But anyway, it is very little discussed how powerful music is as a delivery mechanism, right? And people don't think very much about the lyrics in the songs they listen to and what those might be doing to them and why it is certain sounds and frequencies work and what they do. People don't really think about why it is when you're in the club and a certain record comes on, every single ass in the room goes into a fucking ultra squat position. People don't really think about why it is when certain records are played next to each other in clubs, people start headbutting each other. You can do this. I've done it. I've many, many times. You go, this plus this equals this. Music is way more powerful than people think about and realize. So what I'm doing is putting into music things that I wanted to learn, things I wanted to integrate, you know? When I was a little kid, I used to read my revision notes over ambient music and play it when I went to sleep. And that was how I did my revision. So wow. I've been aware of this for a long time.
Yeah, I made rhymes when I was in primary school to remember things like the food pyramid. And I can still remember that rhyme, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
And, you know, I would remember people saying to me, you know, why can I remember the lyrics of a song so well, but I struggle to learn something I studied? Well, for one, you're listening to a song over and over again, presumably, if you like it. And then second, it's not just the lyrics themselves. It's that they're embedded within a melodic structure. And that melodic structure just, it's an additional thing that your memory can kind of grab onto, right? And you mentioned writing. Writing is kind of like outsourcing our memory, which is useful in a way. Like if I have a to-do list and I write down the things I need to do, I don't have to remember anything. I just have to remember to check the list. So there are uses to outsourcing your memory. But music as a psychotechnology, as you put it, it makes total sense that if I'm listening to one of your albums over and over again, the ideas are not just, it's not just that I'm singing along or listening, but I'm actually integrating those ideas into the way I view the world. So it's, and, yes. and the ideas are meaningful. So you're integrating meaning into the way you see things. And this kind of leads me to a, mm-hmm. maybe a broader question, which is, how would you, being a connoisseur of meaning, how would you define meaning? You know, what is meaning mean to you? I know it's a broad question.
Well, it's an individual question. Okay. What has meaning to you might be very different to what has meaning to me. And sure. Again, this goes back to what myth is for and what myth does, and thinking about myth and art, myth, all of these things as a mirror with which you can look at that, and it shows you where you are and who you are. Yeah. And it shows you where you could be and where you yeah. are, you know. Mm. The Joseph Campbell way of looking at it was, say you're watching Star Wars and you're identifying with Luke, and you're in, you know, your teens, that's correct. You're in the right place. That's what you should be doing. If you're watching Star Wars and you're identifying with Luke and you're in your early 50s, something's gone drastically wrong, because you should be looking at Obi-Wan Kenobi. You should have moved on by this point, right? And the mythology of the culture, that's what it's for. And so back to the question of meaning, what has meaning to you will be very different at different stages of your life. And we can use art and culture as a way of examining that, and examining what things mean to us and what has meaning to us. And meaning is, of course, the very sustenance of life itself.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
Outside of sunlight and water and food, the rest of what keeps us alive is meaning.
Yeah.
What has meaning to us is an individual thing, and it's a choice as well. And some of us choose to find meaning in things which poison us without even thinking about it. And that, again, goes back to what I was saying earlier about music. And what's in the music? What's it saying to you? What are you listening to? What are you programming yourself with? What are these ideas? What is this? What is the world that you're building inside your head? What is that? And what's it doing to you? Is it beneficial to you? Because you get to choose. This is the thing. You get to choose what has meaning. There's a David Foster Wallace Meaning Wave song about that very specific thing that's about 8 minutes long, and it's great. I would recommend that whole record. But you get to choose. You're constantly at work. You're constantly creating. That's what man is doing. At all times, you're constantly creating. You're creating things. You're creating the very existence around you. You're creating the very world around you, right? And you're as powerful in your creation unwittingly as you are wittingly. Just as powerful. And the problem is when you're creating unwittingly, quite likely that's someone else's plan, right? If you're not enacting your own plan, you're enacting somebody else's. Mm-hmm. The world will ask you who you are, and if you do not know, it will tell you. The devil will find work for idle hands to do, all that, right? And if you've not specifically decided what has meaning to you and what is meaningful to you, something else will have, right? Mm-hmm. And that will be joyriding around in your body like a skin suit, like a fucking full, like a monster truck at a bumper car rally, and causing all sorts of problems. And that's not necessary. Like, that doesn't actually have to be the case. You know, all you have to do is decide that you're going to take charge of these things, and you're going to decide what has meaning and what doesn't, and you're going to orchestrate your life in that fashion.
Yeah, and you're going to choose which kind of levels of meaning you're going to go to, because there's obviously different things are meaningful in different ways. Like, if I ask you, why do you get out of bed in the morning? The answer you give me is going to tell me about what you find meaningful. And maybe someone says, well, I want to make lots of money. And maybe that's meaningful within your current context, but that's still kind of subordinate maybe to a higher meaning you have in your life, which is you want lots of money because you want security. And that's subordinate to something even higher. Mm. So you got to kind of consciously aim.
What put that there?
Level.
Why is that there? So you need to go through, Like, because something put that there. You didn't necessarily put that there yourself, right?
Mm.
That specific tree that you just spoke of, right?
Yeah.
So you wake up because you want money. You want money because you want a certain kind of lifestyle. You want a certain kind of lifestyle because what? I don't know, a music video I saw in 1993 or whatever the fuck, right? Or like an argument I had with my mother or whatever. It's like, and then you go, well, is that, do I want that there? Is that good for you? It doesn't have to be there, right? That you could go remove that thing. And if you remove that thing, everything underneath it is suddenly gone. And you get to construct your existence. You get to construct your reality in the manner of your own choosing. You are the artist. Everything, you know, everyone's an artist because an artist is someone who makes choices, right?
Okay.
So you go, if I put this brushstroke here, that is a cloud. If I put that one there, it is a tree or whatever the fuck, right? You're making decisions. Everything you leave in and you leave out is of mad importance. You're making a song. You go, I'm going to put a hi-hat here. I'm going to put a snare drum there. If you do it in any other way, it's radically different. You do that with your life, right? I'm going to do this. I'm not going to do this. Everything you do is of massive importance. And if you change one thing, everything changes. The world changes, right?
Yeah.
So if you walk around in your life not paying any attention and just letting, you just look like a fucking, you're flailing around like a monkey with a paintbrush. But like, you know what I mean? You don't have to be. Your life is a masterpiece of your own choosing if you act with deliberateness of purpose. And if you, you know, actually think things through. The big, I would say, like fucking almost all unnecessary suffering is a direct result of people not thinking things all the way through. People will go through like one level of thoughts. There's like, say there's 10. People will go through one and think they've done it, right? That's how you end up with communism. It's like people didn't think it all the way through. It's pretty simple if you think it all the way, you go, oh, fuck, that will happen. If we go dum-ba-dum-ba-dum, but they just think about the nice bit at the beginning and they don't go all the way through. That's what babies do, and that's cool for babies, but we're not babies. And that's why the infantilization of culture is a problem, and that's why the whole psyop of people listening to music about the, you know, direct experience of the horny teenager for their whole lives is a problem. That's why Meaning Wave is useful and necessary, because, you know, if all you're listening to is music about the experience of the horny teenager, which is like 95% of pop music, then it's not really that surprising that so much of society is in this creepy state of arrested development in their 40s and 50s, acting like teenagers, sitting around jacking off over Funko Pops. Ridiculous.
So speaking of like age and kind of maturity, on your first EP, I think you released it in 2014, the first song on that EP is my favorite. It's John the Baptist. And when I
listened to that, was 2004.
Did I say 2014?
2004. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, 2004. Yeah. 10 years later.
Yeah, yeah.
That song. When I listened to it, I sense a lot of like, kind of tension with yourself. The song seems to be very confessional. Like you're kind of saying things and getting them off your chest. And I think in the second kind of half of the song, there seems to be like a kind of wrestling with faith, with God. What would you today, as Akira the Don now, say to that Akira the Don who wrote John the Baptist? What advice would you give that guy?
Lift weights. Like literally, I think about this stuff. Like, and I've been asked that question or a variation of that question quite a lot, and oftentimes I'll be like, well, I wouldn't say anything because like, you know, where I am now is where I need to be right now, and da 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 da. But like realistically, I could have avoided like decades of unnecessary suffering and anguish and angst and all manner of fucking really big problems, if I'd just been picking up heavy things and putting them down again from a very young age. Picking up heavy things and putting them down again builds up your body and builds up your mind-body connection and makes you very, very secure and confident and at ease. And a great deal of the unnecessary suffering of which we earlier spoke, which is often a result of people not thinking things all the way through, is also a lot of things, a result of people not doing things all the way through. So you get part of the way, you go, oh yeah, I'm going to read and make myself smart. But if you do not also simultaneously make yourself strong, you're lacking an incredible fundamental thing. And you can only exist in a state of a certain kind of inadequacy. And you know, in your subconscious knows that you are weak. Your subconscious knows that you could be crushed. Your subconscious knows that you could not actually protect the woman you're with. And they are therefore a sniveling fucking worm, and you do not deserve her. And you will act in that manner, and your exterior world will reflect that in that manner. Literally, I was never fucking told or taught anything about physicality, and I literally only worked it out pretty fucking recently. And so yes, if the young me, and I would go earlier than that, I would go way earlier than 2004, because I was like 23, 24 at that point, I would go back to like 10, you know, type thing, 11 type thing. And I'd say, you little motherfucker, all the fucking things, all the trouble I had at school, all the awful stuff that happened, so much of it would have been avoided had I been as competent and integrated in my physicality as I was in other areas. There's this psyop, and the psyop at that point was like, people who are artistically inclined are not physical. That's jocks and they're retards. So the jocks are over there and they're mean and they're retards and they're strong. And the cool arty people, you guys take loads of drugs. That's what you should do. You should take loads and loads of drugs. That's what artists do, all right? Don't integrate your physicality. Just go get fucked up and maybe don't kill yourself type thing. It's very, very silly. And there's obviously lots of reasons for why that might be. But what you know the truth as you get older, like some of the most sort of cognizant, wise, interesting and well put together and creative all around people I know these days I meet in the gym.
Like, interesting.
That whole, and it's such a psyop because it was just shit you saw it in movies, right? It was just like in movies you have the guy who lifts weights is a retard. They still do it. What was the film I saw recently that I didn't like? But people were telling me to watch. I think Peterson said it was good. Free Guy. It was Ryan Reynolds playing, essentially being in Grand Theft Auto.
I've seen that.
And that had this like this archetype of like strong version of him is just a moron. Like there's the guy who's like the guy who lifts weights version of him is just airhead moron.
Yeah, and it's
not helpful. So yes, there you go. Lift weights.
Lift weights. Eat a lot more meat.
Shit will be better.
I always ate a lot of meat.
I wrestled for many years. Because again, society told me that I needed to be eating lots of vegetables and this, that, and the other. I constantly had like basically the whole food thing. I had like acid problem. I was like lying awake at night, like in agony for years. Oh, and I'd go to the doctor and they'd try and make me like take pills, and I never trusted government drugs, so I refused. And I eventually worked out if I just stopped eating pasta and bread and shit like that, it went away almost immediately. I was like, oh, fuck.
Interesting.
And then eventually I started removing things, and I eventually worked out if I just removed vegetables and carb stuff from my diet, I suddenly felt amazing, didn't have any of the physical ailments that had been plaguing me for decades, and life was beautiful, you know.
Yeah,
and that's weird.
I often think about, like, use the term psyop, right? It seems like people were so oblivious to it back then. I often wonder, what are some things that are happening right now that people are just completely oblivious to? Like, what are some things that you and I completely kind of accept without question, even today, that we can't even talk about what they might be because it's just so integrated into our day-to-day lives that in 20 years from now, people are going to say, oh, that was a psyop. I often wonder about that because...
Well, what is that? Everything's a psyop. I'm going to do a new version of that song. I got that song with Reba Tez, Everything's a Scam. And we need a new version called Everything's a Psyop. Because it fucking is.
Well, by psyop, you mean psychological operation, right?
Yeah.
And you mean well, I guess meaning wave in a way is like a positive psyop.
Exactly. Well, here's the thing. You're going to, like I was saying earlier, like, yeah, program or be programmed. The world will ask you who you are, and if you don't know, it will tell you. So if you are not programming yourself deliberately, something else is. All times, at all times, everything's a psyop. And you go, all right, well, like some of these psyops were set in place a long time ago, and people don't even know they're psyops anymore. They were set up 2,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago. People forgot they were psyops. They're still psyops. So like, yeah, that's what is going on. And it is your responsibility as a sovereign individual to program yourself. And like I was saying, get the desired outcome. And you have to think things through and go through things and trace things back as far as you can and see if like the foundation is the correct foundation. If not, remove it, replace it with something else. Order, monitor your fucking habits. What are you doing? Habits. Yeah. Your habits are probably psyops.
Yeah, and right? self-imposed.
Quite likely. And a lot of times, like, it's like you, certain things that you do habitually that you don't realize you do habitually, you do them because that was encouraged by something nefarious, a fucking advert, a book, or whatever it was that exists. But like, if you do not work it out, no one else is going to do it for you. You can save mankind. It's literally only you that can do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't really have anybody else that you can control other than yourself anyway. So even if it was responsible for, even if someone else was responsible for saving mankind, you still can't make them do it. So the only person you can kind of steer in the right direction is yourself anyway. So
tell 24 Akira the Dawn that as well. That's another thing. You know, some things are in your control and others not. Like, do not waste any fucking time concerning yourself with things outside of the realm of your direct control. Like, do not do that. That's another unnecessary suffering. You go, unnecessary, like, to go, okay, what's unnecessary? Because, you know, suffering is necessary. Some suffering is very necessary. Suffering is, life is suffering, right?
Yes.
Is one aspect, one thing that everybody knows. However, unnecessary suffering is not necessary because it's unnecessary suffering by definition. And unnecessary suffering tends to be, as we were saying earlier, not thinking things all the way through. It's almost always being outside of the realm of the domain of your direct control, which is the moment, essentially, being outside the moment. You're worrying about a future that doesn't exist. That's outside the moment. That's unnecessary suffering. It's also giving creative power to that which you do not wish to exist. That's praying to the devil. You know what I mean? Feeling anxious about the past or regretful or sorrowful or nostalgic or whatever it is, that past doesn't even exist. That's some weird shit that your brain remade that. It is not a photocopy of the truth. It is not a movie. It's not like a recording of what happened. It's a reconstruction. It's not even real anymore. It doesn't exist. All that exists is the moment. And every time you're outside of that, that's a problem. And you're creating unnecessary suffering for yourself and for the rest of the world. You know? Tell little Akira the Dawn that.
So my two favorite Meaning Wave albums you've made. The thing is, just there's so much you're saying, I can't possibly comment on everything. So I'm just... I love what you're saying. Because what I'm hearing is, it's very obvious to me that you've been influenced by the Meaning Wave itself, right? Obviously, you're spending more time listening to it than any of us because you're actually composing it. So, I mean, you're probably listening to these clips over and over again, trying to get the right sound bites, trying to get the right snippets. So, obviously, it's influenced you a lot. My two personal favorite Meaning Wave albums are Waterwave, which you actually mentioned already with David Foster Wallace.
Hey.
Just because the speech is, I mean, incredible, and the mixing you did is great. But my other favorite, I think, is underrated, and that's Dune Wave. I love One Step Beyond Logic. The final song on that album is incredible. Which, I'm sure you've been asked this before, but I'm curious, which album is your favorite that you've made, personally?
Which one are you most proud right of? Right now it's Dune Wave LP. Which is coming out this year.
Awesome.
So you've heard the Dune Wave EP from, what was that, 2018, 2019? It was three or four tracks. The album that is coming out this year, which is 20 songs, I believe, is by far the biggest and most glorious and epic and anthemic and dense wisdom wise thing that I've yet had anything to do with. I suppose it's a bit of a cop out saying my favorite thing is the newest thing, but it should be the case if you are improving and progressing and so on and so forth. Dune is incredible as a text.
Yeah.
It's biblical.
Yes.
In that it is so dense with wisdom and like the kind of wisdom that is worked out over thousands of years.
Mm.
You know, the kind of the way that, say, Meditations has got, you know, wisdom that withstands fucking epochs, which is why it's still useful and we still have it. The Bible, right? There's not that many texts in our contemporary canon. There's none in our contemporary canon that you could really say that about other than Dune.
Yeah.
Dune, yeah. We'd say Dune in the UK, but like, and particularly working with Danica on it, she's like done an amazing job of like finding the diamonds in the mines of Dune. And we spent a long time, we've been working on this record for years.
Wow.
For years, we've been working on this record. Yeah, and you're going to love it. You're going to love it. It's great.
Yeah. Well, so I didn't even know that you were making one. So this, this is great news for me. I'm looking forward to listening to it. I'm curious.
Well, I'll tell you something. Like, what's interesting about Meaning Wave is I love all of it. I'm very proud of all of it. There's not one Meaning Wave record that I'm not happy to listen to that I am not glad exists. And I couldn't say that about my previous catalog. And it's very rare for people who make artistic who create things to be able to do that, right? Because what happens is and there's reasons for this, is oftentimes when you listen to your older music, you only hear the mistakes or what you would do differently now. Is it like I was saying earlier, right? Art is a mirror. So your own art is very specific in that regards because it shows you where you are now and where you were then. And where you were then is like usually like by just inherently not where you are now. Where you are now is where you're happy to be and so on and so forth, right? So listening to old stuff oftentimes for people, it's like, oh man, I wish I would do this different and that different. Not the case of Meaning Wave. All of it great. And while I would definitely do a lot of it different now and a lot of it, you know, I would mix better or use different sounds or whatever it is, it's great and I love it all. I'm very proud of it and very glad it exists. And I can happily listen to it all day. Awesome. Which I don't because I'm too busy making new stuff. So I very rarely get to. Yeah. When I'm doing live streams or what have you is the only time I'll listen to old stuff. Mm. And then I'll go, I will be with the audience going, hey, wow, this is fucking great, isn't it? Hey, how about that?
Do you make like time in the day to just listen to stuff, podcasts, etc., and try and kind of explore different areas so you can find new material for Meaning Wave? Or does it just kind of come naturally, organically in your own normal listening patterns?
Well, one thing is I don't try anything. And I notice you've used this word try quite a lot. And there is no try. There is only do. Mm. And one thing is it is actually like quite like very important, like a important mindset shift because I used to do a lot of trying. I used to say try a lot. And I removed that some years ago and have found it to be hugely beneficial. To shift from having, because, you know, you, like I was saying, you're always creating unconsciously or consciously, deliberately or undeliberately. It's always happening. And when try is a part of your lexicon, you're always in a state of not having achieved or not doing. There's a kind of weakness in that. So I'm actively engaged in all manner of things. And they're all a case of, so this, for putting everything in my life, I am aiming at being deliberate and chosen, and I'm constantly finding areas which need refining constantly. And I suspect this will go on forever and I will die, right? Constantly finding dead wood that needs removing, constantly monitoring my habits and finding some fucking stupid, unuseful thing that I've picked up from somewhere that is not serving me or anyone else. But it's a constant state. But with regards to what you're talking about there, part of the aim that I have and part of the version, the person I'm aiming at being and the work I'm aiming at creating and the usefulness I'm aiming at embodying involves research, certainly, and involves listening to things. You have to. It's like crucial. It's crucial that I be listening to new music. It's crucial I be listening to old music. that I do not yet know. It's crucial that I be reacquainting myself with certain things for specific reasons musically, because music is a time travel device and it's very useful to go and find certain things from the past that you might need in the present. I'm consistently listening to things that might well become meaning wave or will certainly help me to understand certain things greater, take me on journeys and adventures that will lead me to places that I need to go. And it's very easy to resist certain things, you know, it's very important to force yourself to do certain things. Now, I am going to listen to this 1 hour lecture and not a series of 5 minute drivel videos about pop culture or something.
Yeah.
Like, which is very easily done. You only have a certain amount of time. And it's like, well, you could listen to X guy complaining about Star Wars for 2 hours because it's like easy and fun and entertaining, or you could listen to audio book from ancient esoteric text that changes everything forever. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, that was a long ass answer to that short question, which, and the answer is yes.
Yeah, well, it's a good answer.
And it's fucking crucial.
What you said about try is so true, because it kind of makes me think of something Christ says, which is let your yes be yes and your no be no. Right? Don't say, I swear I'll do this. Well, just do it. Let your yes be yes, or just say no, I'm not going to do it. But don't say I'll try and do it, or I hope I'll be able to.
There's
do
no
it,
try. Yeah, I'll there's no try.
It. Just
there is no try. Mm. Like, if you allow that weakness and weak language in your life, that's what you'll get.
Mm. Do you think
that's what everything will become?
Do you think that's a key to? Do you think that's one of like the essential principles to being productive? Changing that relationship to trying.
Yeah, there is. Yes, non-negotiable. I keep saying to people, non-negotiable. People are like, oh, how do I get motivated to do stuff? It's like, there is no motivation. You do it. It's non-negotiable. Why do you want people? Someone was asking me the other day, like, how do I motivate myself to go to the gym? So, well, why do you want to go to the gym? He's fat, right? And he doesn't want to be fat. I go, all right, boom. So you don't want to be fat. What do you have to do to not be fat? How many, you got to go to the gym 5 days a week, whatever you've decided. So you do it. That's it. There's no, I need motivation. There's no, oh, I don't feel like it. There's no, oh, it's raining. You just fucking do it. You reverse engineer your aim. Then you put in place systems that will carry you to your aim. And then you enact those systems, and you do that with the power of discipline. You know about discipline because you know meaning. We've listened to about 800 meaning wave songs about discipline. Just fucking do that. Right.
Yeah.
There is no try. There's no maybe. You do it. And then what's cool about anything discipline related that you do that's a system, it will become a habit.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then it's just fucking carrying you. Your habit will carry you to your aim. Like fucking Alec Empire crowd surfing to the stage in Reading in 1994 or whatever. You know, it will just do that. There is no try will kill you. Try is poison. So much weak language. You've got to be really careful. Like I always tell people, you've got to monitor your habits, but you've got to monitor your language, because your language, right? That's the operating system of reality as far as you're concerned. If there's no word for a thing, it doesn't even exist, right? If there's no way of conceptualizing a thing. No, it's cool.
Cut you off. But yeah. Like, so you organize your perceptions with language. So...
Yeah. So if you're allowing weak language in there, then that's what you will get.
Yeah.
It's all of it. It's like, and I am constantly doing this, and you know, you constantly have to monitor it. And you the more you do it, the more you find. People walking around damning everything, right? People are like, God damn this and God damn that, which is a crazy thing to do, right? It's such a crazy thing to do. You're going around God damning everything. What does that mean? What does that do? Well, it's a powerful word, like, Either we believe that they are or we do not, right? And if you do believe that words have meaning and have power, then you really should be more careful with them. So you just shit like that. I don't be damning anything. And occasionally I'll fall back into it and I have to stop myself. I just switch that around and turn it to bless. So I just be God, I'll be blessing everything, right? I mean, if you want to damn something, there's some things that should probably be damned. You want to be careful and go, all right, that will get damned. But you don't be damning things you like. You don't be damning yourself or your kids or your... You know,
it's
crazy things to do.
Yeah, that to me is, there's sometimes you'll hear people use certain words, and I'm probably guilty of it myself at some point, but you'll hear people use kind of very heavy terms for very kind of superfluous daily experiences, and you kind of go, I don't think you realize the weight of what you're saying, but you might not realize it, but there's a larger context that you're a part of.
You do. You might not, but you do. What's the thing they were saying, red letter media? You know, you might not, but your brain did. Like, you didn't see that, but your brain did. Like, your subconscious you knows. Subconscious you knows that you've damned it to hell and back a million times and will treat you accordingly. Subconscious you does most of the heavy lifting, and the further through life you go, the more it does. And if you've trained that thing to think that you're the sort of person who sort of is wishy-washy and tries and is damned, then don't be surprised if your life sucks. Yeah, don't be surprised if everything's going to shit around you.
You know what you said about how the subconscious does most of the heavy lifting? I think all of us have had an experience where we're walking with a friend and our friend says something like, hey man, you know you always say that, or you always do this. And you look at your friend, you sincerely are surprised, and you go, really? Do I really do that? And it's so kind of unconscious that you're always doing it, and everybody around you sees it. And finally, someone has kind of pierced through the veil, and the last person to realize that you're doing that or saying that is you, until somebody points it out to you. And I think there's also an element of, this is where reflection from other people is necessary, because sometimes there's almost like a closed loop of the self, right? Where the self can't maybe see itself, like the eye can't see its own pupil without some form of reflection. And so in a way, it's not just the music you listen to, it's not just the media you consume, but it's the people. And I know you know this, but the people you surround yourself with. Mm. I mean, there's that famous saying that you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. If you've got people who are just telling you what you want to hear, then you're basically cut off from reality. And you know, a lie is really, you know, in my mind, a lie is like restricting access to reality for someone, because the narrative in their head doesn't match what's actually happening. Right. So if you've got friends who are just lying to you to make you feel good, you're living in a fantasy world. You're living not in the real world. You're kind of restricted and cut off from who you really are. And unless there's that kind of reflection, there's that ability to look in, and hopefully sometimes have friends do that for you, you'll always be one step behind yourself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's an evil. It's a disgusting and evil thing to do to a person, to not tell them the truth, and to go along with their delusions, to calcify the prison of their own delusions. What an awful thing! Those are not friends. Those are wicked demons, and it's a terrible thing. And you know, that's why, again, that's why meaning, right? If you go, well, you're the sum of the people, five people closest to you. Well, you could choose them now.
True.
Rather than listening to your annoying homie who's trying to get you to go to the pub all the time, you could choose to instead listen to the wise words of Marcus Aurelius, a song by Akira the Don, all day, and then become more like that motherfucker. You could choose Alan Watts. I used to think of it as like shoulder angels, you know, like those cartoons, like, in the old cartoons, you'd have like a devil pop up on your shoulder, and then there'd be like an angel pop up when you're trying to make a decision. Devil's going, do that thing, and the angel's going, do that thing. And your homies be like that, right? But I'd be like, oh, what if I just like decide I concoct my own choir of shoulder angels? This is early. So I was like, all right, what would Jocko Willink do in this situation? And so when I'd be presented with things, little Jocko would pop up and he'd go, stop me, you know, say good. Something. What would David Goggins do? Stop being a bitch. All right, I will stop being a bitch. David Goggins' angel says, stop being a bitch. You know, the early sort of meaning wave pantheon was a case of me building a choir of shoulder angels who would essentially act as the people closest to me, the five closest to me that I wanted to be most like. And everyone can do that now. You can choose the inputs. You can choose the who you're going to be listening to the most, whose advice you're going to be listening to the most, who's just general energy or general sort of, you know, integrity or whatever it is that which you have around you the most. And again, that's down to you choosing with deliberateness how your life is going. And again, that thing that goes back to you, the whole thing about myth and art being a mirror, If you're like some deluded motherfucker who thinks, yeah, everything's great, and your homies are telling you everything is great, but still your life is shit and it must be someone else's fault. But like using art as a mirror can be very helpful. And it's usually a case of the things that you resist. Right? Here's the thing. Oftentimes, it's really good to pay attention to what's annoying you about other people.
Yeah.
Because what's annoying you about other people is usually something in you that is in you and is actually something you need to fix about yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember when I worked that one. I heard that. But I did. And then I started applying it to myself. And I've always done it ever since. When I find something or someone annoying me, rather than just going into the annoyingness of them, I'll go, oh, shit. Okay. So this is probably something in me, and have a look, and I will usually find it.
Yeah.
In there. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's usually things to do with relationships, like the way you relate to other people, because normally you discover that thing that that person is doing through your relationship. So it might be that they constantly interrupt you and you start going, man, this guy just interrupts me all the time. But you don't realize that he's interrupting you because he can't get a word in because you're interrupting him the whole time. And you just, you don't see that, right? I had a colleague at a bookstore I used to work at called Bargain Books a few years ago. And we were just colleagues, but one day I was chatting to him and he said something and then I interrupted him and he just stopped and he went, Dylan, you got to stop this, man. I said, what? He's like, you always interrupt me. And it was like the scales fell from my eyes and I realized he was right. And there was nothing I could do but apologize. And then after that, I noticed how often I did it. I was a very, very bad listener, but only once I realized that could I actually go into conversations and think, okay, I'm just going to try and learn. I'm just going to try and figure out more about the other person. So maybe it's not even a friend. Maybe it's a colleague or a stranger even who might tell you something. And in some ways, it's more likely to be a stranger possibly because a stranger doesn't have any long-term relationship with you. In some ways, a stranger might give you more honest feedback because they don't need to appeal to your ego for the sake of the relationship. So sometimes I think even strangers, you know, we don't want to ignore their inputs and just dismiss them as someone that doesn't know me. Maybe the fact that they don't know you is actually giving you more reliable feedback.
Yeah, of course, certainly. In the state of that, though, it's not even the feedback they're giving you, it's the feedback you get from how they make you feel. So, for example, I have a Spanish teacher, and he was annoying me the other day because he kept talking over me and he was being very loud and sort of like banging things around and stuff. And I was like, that's annoying me. And then I was like, huh, that's basically me. Like, I basically am guilty of doing that. I am guilty of cutting over people sometimes. It's one of these things you monitor and you make sure you're not doing it and it'll start slipping back in sometimes, right? Yeah. And I was like, I also can be just like unnecessarily loud and bang things around. And I'd be like, well, that's just me. That's fine. That's who I am. But I was like, well, it's annoying me and him. So like, maybe it's just a case of I could just monitor myself a little more in certain social settings and see if I am or am not like talking over people unnecessarily or being unnecessarily abrasive or what have you. And that's probably the case. And it's not necessarily always the case either. Maybe you were fucking had a headache that day. But the thing I found that is just really useful is that in life interactions, when things annoy you about other humans, that's a great opportunity for you to go, maybe it's me. It's a bit like Scott Adams' ka-ching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, write that down. Scott Adams' ka-ching thing, which I need to turn into a song. It's on my list. I have a very big list. Anyway. I think I might move that one up my list. He had a little thing, throwaway thing he said in a live stream once. Of cha-ching, you read a negative comment online in your head, rather than being like, oh, fuck's sake, you say cha-ching. Because that's like free money in that, hey, maybe you just learned something. Maybe there's something in what they're saying that's actually true. You don't like it now. It hurts your ego now. It's annoying now. Maybe there's something in it that's useful. So you just go cha-ching and move on, right? So you don't have the negative, oh, I feel bad now. You go cha-ching, could be useful. Maybe it's not useful, but associating the negative input with the positive response that perhaps you will learn something, perhaps it will basically at some point make you money or make you better or something, might not. But it removes the negative association and it stops you getting bummed out when reading large lists of comments. Most of me, like, it's like 99% incredibly positive. Like, yeah, every comment section or anything is to the point that people think it's not real. I remember Peterson being just amazed by it. And talking to lots of people about it. He was on a bunch of different podcasts, going, you know, Cure the Town's comment section is amazing. He was telling Wim Hof about it. And, wow. But like, so you every day I just did it. Every day I spend a certain amount of time in the morning reading as many comments as I can before I do my Spanish lesson. I go through emails, I read comments, respond to as many as possible, as an allotted period. And there'll be 99% incredibly positive. There'll be like one maybe that's mean, and those used to bum me out. And then I'd have that feeling of that would infect other things. But the cha-ching really, really works. You go, oh, boom, nice. And then you move on. Well, just saying cha-ching makes you feel good.
I'm going to start using that.
It's really good. It really works. And then what you find is you like a little later, you'll go, oh, so that thing. And you're like, oh, yeah, they were kind of right.
Yeah.
Like they said it in a way that was mean or what have you, but there is something in that. Or you go, yeah, I don't agree with that, but thank you for, you know, thank you for adding it.
Yeah. And sometimes I've found sometimes the comment is obviously true, but it's not something that you thought of as a bad thing. That person just doesn't like it. It doesn't match their taste. I remember doing a live stream that was very long and very slow. And my goal when I sat down to do the live stream was to be very long and to be very slow. And the guy commented, this is so long and so slow. And I said, I found it very helpful just to tell him, it's very long. I thought it was very, very long and very, very slow. Just like, you know, as I intended, if you think this is long, you should see, you know, so sometimes it's not necessarily that the person is wrong. They might actually be right, but that might be what you intended. And if it's what you intended, then they just perhaps have a different taste or they just don't like it. And it shouldn't be illegal to not.
And that's good, but it's good. Know. And like, oh, thank you for, yes, that was my intention. I'm glad that worked.
Yeah.
And then there's a negative reaction. It's not in itself negative.
Yes.
And the idea that we, this weird idea that we have that everything should be positive in reaction is very strange and makes no sense at all. That some people do not like a thing, thank God, right? I mean, it's certain, so there's certain people you want to not like your stuff. Yeah, there's certain people who should not like what you're doing. And if they do, then maybe what you're doing is wrong. That is not how you should be doing it, you know?
Yeah.
The important thing with all of those things, the sort of lesson in all those things is that social interactions or experiences that could be negative and could poison us in some way and affect us in a negative fashion do not need to. And it's purely a matter of choice on our part that we choose. A bit like near the beginning of the conversation we were talking about, you get to choose what has meaning, right? You get to choose if something affects you negatively.
Yeah.
You get to choose how you react. That's what you have power over. That's all you have power over in a way. With regards to other people's actions, you have power over how you react to them, or whether you react at all. That's your power.
I do think Chesterton has this great line where he says something like, there's a connection from the eyes to the heart that doesn't go through the brain. So I do think on some level you might see something and it gets to your heart before you get a chance to decide how you're going to view it. So you might have an emotional response that hits you immediately, and that might be in some ways out of your control. But right after that, when the mind enters the conversation, at that point you kind of need to take the helm. But I don't think I can tell myself how to behave in a situation that I've never been in, because I'm not going to know until I get there how I'm going to feel or how I'm going to respond. But at least if you have that principle, when you get there, you can say, okay, let me kind of just be conscious of how I'm responding right now and how I feel. And let me try and make the most, the best
move try
going forward.
No try.
Let me go forward in the best possible way.
One, no try.
I'll put a little try counter on the video, and every time one of us says try, it'll
try getting exactly. It's detachment is the key. So there are little things that you can do. If you're in one thing I've done is like in any kind of situation where an emotional response might occur, it's smart to anchor yourself to yourself, thus for reminding yourself that A, you exist, you have control. Everything that comes in, it's like a plastic bag in the wind. You know, it's not you. You are not your thoughts, right? Or your emotions. You are that which is aware of them. That's what you really are. You're not so saying, I don't know how I'm going to react. It's not you reacting. You are that which is aware of the reaction, right? So you want to, that's what you want to occupy as much as possible. And you want to discipline yourself to be that as much as possible. And it's a very simple way. What I do is I do the Vulcan thing. I trained myself to do this walking around New York like 20 years ago. I just stretch my hand. And doing that reminds me of my physicality, which ironically reminds me that that's the of what I actually am, which is not the physicality. It's that which is aware of the physicality, not the thoughts, that which is aware of the thoughts, right? Not the emotions, that which is aware of the emotions. So if I'm doing that and there is something, an emotional response, I'm able to be aware that the emotional response is coming in and observe it like a plastic bag in the wind going by the window. Now, I cannot do this all the time yet. It is a work in progress. I'm very much working on it, but I am way better at it now than I ever was. And the more I do it and the deeper into that I become, the better everything is. And I do believe it is possible to be that as much as one might wish to. Like,
do you think,
or as much as, because, you know, there are some things in life you don't necessarily want to be watching John Wick 4 aware that you are consciousness having an experience in a mortal body or what have you, right? Sometimes you want to dissolve and allow that to dissolve. But there are all those things you were just talking about, like, you know, something could happen and I wouldn't know how to respond, so I would try to da 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 na 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 na. In anything like that, you want to know. Be aware of the truth, which is that none of those things are you. They are things of which you are aware and over which you have the control of how to respond, not respond, which things to allow. A thought comes in. That's not you. You know, I teach my son this because when he first started having thoughts come in, he'd be like, oh, am I bad because I had that thought? It's like, no, that's not you. You get to decide what you do with that thing. A thought's come in, you can focus on it, you can go into it, you can explore it, or you can let it go like a wet fucking plastic bag in the wind. It's not you. And so I think that's a very useful way of dealing with such things.
That last example used, I can definitely agree with. I do sometimes worry in myself with, because I used to be very adamant about meditation, and I did sometimes feel I was almost, I don't know if I was getting closer to being human, but there was a tendency to almost view the body as bad and to almost lose that kind of sense of humanity. Because I think there is also something beautiful about the fact that we do get rushes of emotion. In some ways, when I feel a meaningful experience, it's physical. Like, I feel it through my body. I can see goosebumps on my skin, and I actually feel more alive when the body's integrated. And it's in those moments where I really feel like myself. And that's a combination, I would say, of body and soul, if I could put it that way. So
we talked about that earlier.
True. Yeah.
Harmony. Harmony is the fundamental, right? Everything is waves. Everything is frequency. Everything in that we are aware of. And the fundamental is harmonizing, right?
Yeah.
And you have to do that within yourself, and then you have to do that with everything that you interact with. And the more in harmony you can become, the more beautiful the experience. And the further away from harmony you get, the more discordant, the more unpleasant the experience, the more painful the experience, in unnecessary pain. Sometimes, you know, useful pain is good. So that's that. And what you said there with regards to you started feeling your body was bad. Like, I mean, again, that's you were putting a belief and a judgment onto something which is. There can be no good or bad. And certainly that of you, which is aware of your thoughts and is able to be distant from them, that part of you, the true part of that of you, does not have such judgment of things being bad. You know, that's not that you, that's still a thought.
Yeah, I get that view. I get where you're coming from. I get where you're coming from.
True you does not have such petty, unuseful attitudes. Mm. Like true you, that is something that you would have picked up somewhere that would need reverse engineering a bit, right? That would have been something that somebody told you, or you saw in a movie or something like that. That would be an association and a thought and an idea and a sort of memetic infection that had come in somewhere along the way and lodged itself in. That was not the actual you. That's not the pure loving awareness you that is beyond all that.
Yeah, I'm with you there. At the base of things is love. I'd say love is the source of all things. So at the root level, love is animating the world. Which is expressed in Christianity, right? The idea that the world is created for and by love. I just, you know, I used to hold very much to Watts's view that ultimately, because I think if you listen to enough Watts, which I'm sure you have, ultimately you get to the point where Watts is basically telling you that you are God, right? But not God in the Western sense, like, you know, but more in the Eastern sense, kind of elements of Taoism, elements of Buddhism. But I found it very difficult to kind of reconcile that with abject suffering, because I couldn't kind of square why do I experience direct or see direct abject suffering if this is just a game that I'm playing on myself? Like why cause myself suffering just to play a game? It made more sense to me to think, well, maybe there's a good God and the world has fallen. And that makes more sense to me logically that a good God can allow evil to exist and to bring a greater good out of it. But I find it very difficult to imagine that I'm putting myself through suffering just for the sake of a game. Because in the moment, the suffering does feel very real, whether it's an illusion or not. You know? That's a whole other topic we don't have to go into. But that's been
it's a good topic. It's a great topic. And it's something people ask me about a lot. And it's something that particularly comes up with people who are approaching things from the sort of Wattsian lens. And then they're looking through the Petersonian lens. And then they're confused as to how these things can synergize. And particularly with the question of suffering. And so you said the thing, a good God, that would suggest that there's a bad God.
Well,
what are you saying
good,
that there was only
good and evil?
Well, yeah, that's duality, which is secretly unity. And we have to have, for example, you can't have light and no shadow.
True.
It's just becomes nothingness. You have to have the contrast. Now, if you're talking about the idea of God playing a trick on himself, of the idea of the human experience being God creating deliberate limitation, the idea that's in the Dreams album. So if you could have it, if you're God, you could do anything, have any dream. What does he say? Okay. So you have any dream. If you can, what do they call it when you can do what you want in a dream? Lucid. You can lucid dream. So you go, oh, boom, run around. You do all the things you ever wanted to do. You bang every chick you ever wanted to bang. You eat every cake you ever wanted to eat. You do all the stuff. Wow, 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 wow. Eventually, you get bored. Eventually, yeah, you get bored, so you have to start inserting limitations. This is like with computer games. Saints Row 3. I like Saints Row 2. In Saints Row 3, you essentially get fucking superpowers after playing it for about an hour. And so at one point, you've got this game where you're sort of driving around a city and causing mayhem, and you can throw bins at policemen. It's very fun. But in 3, essentially, you start getting fucking superheroes. And once you're a superhero, you can literally fly from one side of the map to the other in a minute. It's boring. You can just nuke a building from space. It's boring. Oh, what the fuck? So to make that fun, you need to remove the god powers and make things interesting again. I fucked up Red Dead Redemption 2 for myself when I first played that. I did a gold hack. I saw online there was a thing that you could like spawn infinite gold. I was like, I did that. Ruined the game. Right? Because it was suddenly no fun. You have everything. Where's the fun in that? Like, the suffering is what makes it. Why suffering? That's the contrast which makes everything else worthwhile. There's nothing that you have in your life that's of value and worth to you that you did not struggle to earn. Right? Nothing of value. You can come up with something now.
Well, my life itself, I didn't struggle to.
The life itself. Well,
you don't know that.
You actually don't know that. And your life, you did struggle to earn. Everything in your life came from the struggle of your life. You could go, okay, rewind to the very beginning of the moment of birth. And you say, well, I didn't struggle to achieve that. Well, actually, in a way you did. That sperm went through all manner of fucking hell to be the one sperm that fertilized the egg. Imagine you're a gang of fucking sperms. RZA's got a great song about this. Million motherfuckers tried to race ahead. I was the one that fertilized the egg.
Nah.
You know, and then he talks about like he fucking finally gets there and he's like, I reached home base. And he's like, then I thought that my work was done, but my struggle had just begun. Life is a struggle. It's like every aspect of your existence has come through some kind of struggle that you could keep tracing back to a point where you can't remember anymore. And on it goes. But back to the question of, so there's the game. You'd have to insert struggle and suffering if it's a game. If it's God playing a game, one way of putting it, you have to have that. Otherwise, what's the fucking point in the game? It's boring. It's no fun. You don't want to play it. And the whole point of the game is to keep playing the game.
I agree. I just don't think that I'm the one orchestrating the game. I think there's something outside of myself. You know, you talked about the kind of higher self. So I don't think it's just, obviously, I'm not confusing the ego for the self you're talking about, right? Because I think we would both agree that the ego doesn't really have much control. The ego's mostly an illusion. But I think, I'm curious, maybe we could just go in this direction and kind of start rounding it off. But with that Wattsian view, I kind of didn't feel like there was anything outside of me. And by me, I don't mean the ego. I mean, even in that broad Brahman definition, ultimately, it's just me. Do you think there's something beyond that? Or do you think ultimately it's just the self?
I would say that the self, what we were talking earlier about language, right? And the power of language. Yeah. And self seems to reduce everything to a small little point, right? So if you're saying everything is the self, which seems like a crazy thing to say anyway, and I do not think that that's what anyone was saying. The idea is that it's in Christianity. The power of creation is available to everybody through my son, Jesus Christ, right? Through Jesus Christ, the power of all creation. Jesus Christ, who came to earth to die for our sins, Jesus Christ, who embodies so much. And one thing that Jesus Christ, it says specifically in the Bible, is that, you know, all come to me through him, and he is in all. So Jesus Christ is in you, right? If you subscribe to that point of view, which means that the infinite power of creation is within you as well, which means that God is within you as well. So true. You could think of it as there's different, and it's, again, all of this is a choice. You get to choose the meaning, right? You get to choose the operating system through which you experience this veil of tears, right? So you could choose to say, okay, Christ is within me, and the power of God in Christ is within me if I choose to believe that it is. If I believe in Christ, then I believe that the power of Christ is within me, which means this: I have the power of creation. I have the power of God within me, which means I do have power over this existence. I do have power over this life. I do get to decide. I'm not a victim, right?
Yeah.
You can choose that framework.
Yeah, power over this life in a kind of very specific sense, right? As to what you can do individually.
Only you individually, of course, yeah. Only individually. Only, yeah. But what you can do individually, I do not know if there's a limit on that. I have not seen any proof that there's a limit on that. The only limit I have seen on that in my own direct experience is the limit imposed by myself.
Yes, yeah. I mean, other than the obvious kind of like physical limitations, because there clearly are boundaries, you know, you talked about duality earlier, you know, like there's this supposed boundary between you and I, and you know, you might call it Maya and you might call it illusion, but there is a boundary. So the, to me, the interesting question is, why is the boundary there in the first place? Not, oh, the boundary is illusory. That's kind of a, to me, that's the first question. The deeper question is, well, why are there boundaries? Why do I feel myself as separate to you? Is it just because I need to feel that way to have this experience? Or is there a reason why? Is there a meaning why I feel myself as an individual ego? And perhaps the ego itself is not bad, but the ego is something that's needed, because through this ego and through some limitation, I can actually impact other people in a positive way. Although I don't think I'm not trying to disagree with you on anything, because I don't disagree with anything you just said. Yeah, I'm actually with you on a lot of that. I tend to lean more towards, I mean, you mentioned the Petersonian lens and the Wattsian lens. I used to be completely Wattsian. Then I kind of moved more towards Peterson. And then I kind of eventually, I'm more now Chestertonian, G.K. Chesterton. The Catholic view makes a lot more sense to me. It's just, I am Catholic. So that view just kind of, it kind of scratches the itch in a way that
you pick the other views. You get to pick, you get to decide. And what you should do is pick the operating system that allows you to have the best experience. And that's all these things are, is they're operating systems for navigating this experience in this realm. There is, and you, people can argue, oh, this was the right, you know, the argument, which is the right one or what have you. Like, what is the optimal life for you? What kind of person do you want to be? Who do you, what person, not even what, even what kind, that's too vague. What person do you want to be, right? What do you admire? And what is the ultimate person of yourself, the version of you that you would most admire, that you wish to exist, right? And give to the world. Wes Watson says something like that I really like. He talks about like building the best, that version of yourself, I think, that you would admire the most, and then give that to the world. What a gift, right?
Yeah.
What a wonderful thing to do. And when you think about it, how not doing that is an awful selfish turdbag thing to do, right? How to allow yourself to be like a weak, unuseful, crappy version of yourself and have that flailing around causing problems and damaging things and getting in the way, when you could be the fucking great, glorious version of yourself that you could be most proud of, that your ancestors would be most proud of, that would make sense of all of their suffering and all of their sacrifice. So here's you, after everything they went through, everything your grandfather went through, his grandfather went through, your great-great-grandmother, all these things they went through, and here's you. How could you not be the ultimate version of you when you have the opportunity to? There's nothing getting in the way of that other than you and your own self-imposed limitations, you dick. How could you do that? You know what I mean? And in order to achieve that, which operating system is going to best work for you, right? And you can reverse engineer that, and you're smart, you've looked at things, you've read things, so you can go, okay, I do not think that a purely Wattsian approach to this, as I understand it, because maybe I'm misunderstanding some things he said and don't, whatever, I don't think that is going to get me to where I need to be. To get where I need to be, I've reverse engineered it, and I need to do these things. And to do these things, this specific operating system, which involves worship and ritual and so on and so forth, is going to get me there. Cool. Choose that. You did it deliberately. You, right? You thought about it. You thought it through. You didn't just fucking flail around and accidentally end up in a place. right? You didn't just fucking roll down a hill and bounce off a step and land on a car, right? And oh, that's me. You did think about it, and that's good. So that's all. That's the best you can do, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. I would even dare I say, amen. Yeah.
Amen. Exactly. Amen. So, you say amen. I like that. Amen. Amen.
Yeah. South African English is very British. That's where the accent kind of goes away. You guys.
Yeah, we used to say amen. Ah, yeah. I've lived outside of the UK so long. I now say amen, like other people. We used to say amen.
Amen.
You're so right.
Yeah. And you probably said can't instead of can't. Although you still have a lot of your accent. Just
can't.
From.
I never said can't. I've never said can't.
Yeah. I've you have.
It's different, like. Yeah.
Yeah.
You North and South in the UK, they've different. It's very rare. UK is crazy. You could check a brick, and by the time you go pick up the brick, the accent is different.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Yeah. People's accents are like radically different, like in a small ass place.
But yeah.
Anyway.
Well, Akira, if this isn't nice, then I don't know what is. Let me end this off. Let me end this off just by saying the point of my channel on YouTube. The reason it's called Existential Delight is I'm basically trying to be the opposite of an existential crisis. So every video, every interview, try and make people feel good about existence and taking a kind of philosophical, but it's really about focusing on G.K. Chesterton's work and introducing that to the world. So just to end this off, and thank you again so much for your time and for sharing your thoughts and for the back and forth. I've really enjoyed it. I just want to tell you something that he said, and I'm just curious what you think. I think you'll agree, but I'm just curious. Chesterton quite famously said, meaninglessness doesn't come from being tired of pain. It comes from being tired of pleasure.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously. Completely correct. What could you add to that? Seek freedom and become a captive of your desire. Seek discipline and find your liberty. That was Dune. That's really Frank good. Herbert, the immortal really Frank good. Herbert. And it's obviously completely right. And this is where we are. And this is West, which way Western man, right?
Yeah.
And over there is OnlyFans and I don't know, whatever shit food people eat that isn't food these days, fucking whatever. And all the so-called easy choices. Anyway, there's an easy choice. Don't do that. Do the other one, right? It's pretty fucking simple. Everything is so beautifully inverted these days. It's very, very easy to navigate this realm, this veil of tears. Just don't do what the capital T-H-E-Y that DJ Khaled's always warning you about. Just don't do what they say. And
yeah. I can agree. I became a dad about a year ago. My daughter's just over a year old now. And it's the most challenging.
That's picking up. What did we say earlier? Pick up something heavy. That's That's picking up the heaviest thing you can think of, right?
Yeah.
Is accepting that responsibility and then actually doing all the things that your conscience, right, tells you you need to do. All the little niggly things. You're like, oh no, I don't listen to that fucking voice. It will tell you everything you need to know. I had my son immediately this, stop this, do this, da 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 da. Fucking all right then. Do all the stuff.
Yeah.
Take the responsibility and then become something worthy. Your kid's gonna look at you like God, you need to be worthy of that.
Yeah.
They're gonna copy you.
That's the goal.
They're gonna copy everything you do. Be worthy of that. You know,
good advice. Yeah, thank you.
How old's your kid?
Just over a year. She turned a year on the 17th of March, which was 6 days ago.
Yeah.
So she's very young. She's just learning to walk now. But I wanted to say, most challenging but most meaningful thing, I think having a child gives you a default state of meaning automatically.
Oh yeah. It's an easy life hack.
Yeah, well, like, it's easy.
In a way, I've said this to people before, for like you're sort of directionless and just fucking have a fucking family. Make a family, right? That's what people used to do. Work for thousands of years, right? Have a family. Accept some responsibility. Turn yourself into the person worthy of the admiration will be just gifted upon you automatically by your son or daughter. You know,
Definitely. Boom.
That's a fucking easy way. It's a lot easier than like flailing around trying to find something that you're interested in or whatever people do. Like if you're not naturally interested in something, like trying to find something you're interested in is a ridiculous pursuit. A much easier thing to do would be to pick up the heaviest thing you can think of and boom. If a kid isn't that and a family isn't that, I don't know what is.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Akira, the Don, Adam, for your time. Really enjoyed speaking with
you. God bless you, Dylan.
Yeah, God bless you.
Yeah, likewise.
Keep doing what you're doing. I'm looking forward to that Dune album. I'm pretty sure I am going to share all of the links to all your stuff in my description video, although your channel's far bigger, but there'll be people in my audience who haven't heard of you. If someone went to your YouTube channel after this video, what would you recommend they start with?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, it depends. Like I said, it depends on the individual. Mm. Depends on where you are in your journey and what have you. I would say the pinned video right now is good for everybody. That's a good one. What I always say with a good way of experiencing Meaning Wave would be, and there's a playlist on the YouTube channel and on Spotify and all the others that has everything in it, is to just go to that and hit shuffle and just dive in randomly. And you'll probably find what you need.
Yeah.
Life tends to work in that fashion.
Yeah. True. Great. Thank you very
much. If you allow it to, life can be an incredibly magical thing.